Hello world, it's me, Dennis, and today I'm getting a chance to do an origin story of the men's circle in Austin, Texas, how it began, who was there, what was the impetus, and I have Clay Boykin, who started it, and Kirby Hiscox, who was right there from the beginning. Clay, I'd like you to start us on the pre-story of before the circle came about and what was going on at the time and when was it in history?
Certainly, Dennis. Thank you. The circle actually was launched 8 years ago in April. April of 2012. Thank you.
Yes.
And prior to that, I had taken about a 20-year hiatus from organized religion and had hit a couple of pretty rough spots in life. One was a health issue and the other was the market crash of 2008, where I spent a couple of years out of work. And that was my dark night of the soul. And I finally skinned my chin on the asphalt enough many times to realize that I can't go this alone. And ended up over at the Unity Church. And that's where I began my personal healing. And along the way, I realized that I didn't trust men. And there was wisdom that other men have that I could benefit from. And I realized that if I could benefit from them, perhaps they could benefit from me. But without trust in other men, I couldn't show up. Eventually, I said, well, I've got to get over this. And I participated in one of the retreats. And after the retreat, I really felt good. And I said, what are we going to do next? And they said, well, next year we'll have another retreat. And I can't wait till next year. I want to start a men's circle. And they try to tell me, well, do it once a quarter. I said, no. Do it once a month. No, I want to do it every week. And I'm going to show up. If nobody else shows up, that's fine. But I need that drumbeat. I need the rhythm and the consistency. And perhaps we can get started there. Well, we promoted it for 3 weeks there in the congregation. And nobody signed up. Zero. Nada. That was my first lesson, because that first night there were about 12 of us. And Kirby, you were sitting next to me, I think, or across from me. And we had 12. And we've never had fewer than 12. Right now we run 25 to 30. While we're on Zoom, we're running about the same numbers.
Now, Kirby, what was your impetus and your story on why you would even join this?
Well, thank you, Dennis. I had, for the first time, sat in a pew at the Unity Church as a participant in a Sunday morning service. I had been inside of the church and various gatherings that it had for seminars and workshops and things like that. But I had recently gone, actually, the day before, there was a funeral there for a mutual friend. And I saw their pastor, Steve Bolin, get up and do a wonderful job there. And the community and the feel of the church was magnificent. I consider it an unchurch, accepting all various religions and ideas and philosophies. It was a beautiful experience for me. So I saw in that Sunday morning bulletin, which would have been on the 14th of April 12, that the next day, tax day of April 15, on Monday evening, there was a men's group going on. And I had, it made me pause and to think about that. I had started a couple of men's groups over the years out in California, et cetera, and led some groups actually in high school. And it intrigued me, and I showed up. And I had no idea. I didn't know who these men were. I'd never met them before. And there was Clay, Dr. Boykin, if you will, as I've affectionately called him over the years. He's generally professorial with the goatee and, you know, all that pomp and circumstance.
Not so much today, huh?
Forgive me, Clay. I love to poke fun at you. I will say, though, in all seriousness, Dennis, that I watched Clay and the other two gentlemen that were the impetus of getting that going really bounce some ideas back and forth. I felt that I could not only participate, but add significant value because I've done this before. Mm-hmm. And I felt and always have that I've been on a spiritual path. And interestingly enough, during these amazingly tough times during the coronavirus, it is very interesting to me to revisit the origins and the concept behind what got this all started.
Exactly.
Evolution. The evolution of the Men's Fellowship Network into the circles of men, into an international entity with one constant, and that has been Clay Boykin. He continues to hold that space week in and week out. He's had some times that he had to miss with deaths in the family, yep. challenges, traveling, things like that. I've took over a few times, many others have. But that firm grip on what could be the future of and what is and currently is the iteration of a gathering of men of all different socioeconomic mm-hmm. situation, all yes. different spiritual paths from men walking in for the very first time. Hey, I went to church for the first time in my life on Sunday and I heard about this. I'm here.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
men like the three of us in this quaint circle that have been and continue to be on a definitive path. And while we are in this coronavirus time, it's challenging to everybody, even those that feel like they've been on a firm-footed, grounded path. This just throws a loop into everything.
It does, because it's changing it all. It's and completely. And Clay, before that first night, you had looked at the men's movement, the Robert Bly, yeah. the all of the mm-hmm. Joseph Campbell and the work, and how were you going to differentiate? What were you going to, sure. what were you looking for? And of course, none of us know how it's going to be at that first mm-hmm. time, but what was going through your mind?
Well, thanks, Dennis. I had a sense that I needed to come at this differently. You know, there's half a dozen different models of men's groups, and there are hybrids all over the place. But what I sensed, at least for me, was I'm not a joiner in a sense of I want to go join a men's group.
Exactly.
And, you know, the connotation there doesn't sit well with me. And so we did, you know, I thought, well, yeah, Carl Jung and the Jungian model and the Robert Bly and the Million Man March and the traditional. And, you know, what we did was what fit for me was more of an integrative reflective or a contemplative circle hmm. where, you know, we didn't call it a group. Actually, we called it the Men's Fellowship Network. And we have, you know, for me, I wanted to go to a gathering. I didn't want to go to a meeting. Because meetings meant business. Someone's right, someone's wrong, decisions are made, and, you know, I didn't want that in there. And so we decided that we'd have gatherings. And we have topics of conversation and not topics of discussion. To me, when I'm discussing something, somebody's right, somebody's wrong, again, and it's your idea versus my idea versus a conversation which is more inclusive. as well, and this is what I needed. I needed to be able to speak in an environment where I wasn't going to be judged. You know, I just wanted to be heard. I wanted to be able to connect my head and heart and then learn how to connect my heart to my mouth and speak from the heart in a circle of men. And that was pretty unnerving for me in the beginning, to be with an intention of being authentic, being vulnerable, standing in my truth with an open heart.
Exposed.
Exposed in a circle of people I don't trust.
Did you, Kirby, also have trust issues with men? I know I certainly did over the course of mine. I really had the strong with that. What was your story, your impetus, because you had been involved with men's gatherings and had had some of this along your journey?
Well, I didn't necessarily have trust issues with men. I had trust issues with women. I had some challenges with men in the business world, men going back on their word, men being dishonest, you know, taking deals from me in the commercial real estate business, taking sales deals away from me in a sales environment, that type of such. But with respect to the men, I was fortunate at that point to have created a group of men out in Southern California. We had gotten together on the beach and had fires and and gathered together. It was a much smaller group, 5, 6, 8 men. And I worked with 3 or 4 of them. And I developed that trust. And we developed a trust amongst us. And it was small. And I learned what it was like to trust in the men, and more importantly, to listen to what they had to say about themselves and also about me. If I may share one specific instance, I was going back home to Des Moines, Iowa for the first time in several years. Challenges with my very religious parents that wouldn't let go and felt like I was, you know, not going to make it to their heaven. And I finally had to back off and say enough is enough. If you can't stop giving me your input on your religion, I don't give it to you. Please don't give it to me. And they wouldn't stop. They couldn't stop. So there was a period of about 3 years that I didn't go back to my home. And I was nervous about going back. And one of the things that I said to the group of men, which will expose a level of vulnerability to me even as I speak this, but then more importantly, because I've grown beyond this, but it was the help of a specific man. Clint was his name. When I shared with the group that I was afraid of going back home to a degree that every time I would go back, it would get me nervous about the environment that I grew up in and the chaos and the infighting and give me huge bouts of insecurity and not enoughness. And I went so far as to say, you know, if I get back there and I get down deep enough into it, I am afraid that I will go insane.
Yes.
I've seen this happen in close-knit groups. I've had relatives that were scary. We've all had friends that were a little bit off. And thank goodness we've had men come into the men's group that collectively we all knew that there's just something wrong there. How can we help? And when I mentioned that specifically, that I was concerned that my old self of worrying as a teenager and a young 20-something, I was in my mid-30s by then, that I could get too close to that craziness. And Clint spoke up and said, "Oh, man, Kirby, no way. You're the most stable guy I know. That's never going to happen." And I'm telling you, that hit me like a lightning bolt. That, I can feel the goosebumps right now speaking it. It affirmed that I had risen above what I grew up in and projected not just an air, but a reality of confidence, self-confidence, togetherness. And it was apparent and evident in this group.
It took another man to show you that.
Oh, yes.
Hey, that's amazing. And Clay, let me ask you then these first few months that you began to see this, what did you begin to watch it evolve as the first few months of the Circle of Men went on?
Well, for one thing, I didn't try and think too far out. You know, some of the guys were saying, well, why don't you put together a plan for the next, you know, 3 months? You know, what topics are you going to do for the next 3 months? And I said, well, I don't know where we're going to end up this Monday night, so how can I plan next Monday night? And so one of the things that we landed on in the very beginning was that this needed to evolve and grow organically, that it needed to have very little structure to it. You know, again, you know, the same reason we don't have meetings, we have gatherings. You know, everything, you think about everything you think about of a meeting and men getting together, and throw all that out the window. You know, to make sure it's a safe space for men to come into, so that I don't feel like when I put something out there that somebody's going to try and fix me or say, oh, I know exactly how you feel, let me tell you about my story and leave me in the dust. But we began to learn how to, what we call, hold space for one another.
And not fix people.
And not fix people. That's exactly right.
Thank you, Kirby. And so you watch yourself begin and watch from the inside out, begin to both heal and grow as you continue to be there in the men's circle. I mean, that's one, when I talk with people and I do human beings talking to human beings about the human experience, I'm deeply interested in how do we grow as consciousness? How do we grow as a human being? We happen to have those double X chromosomes that we have. So how do we grow through this? How do you know that you're growing? Can you talk a little bit about how you knew you were growing in those first few months and time that made you keep coming back?
Thank you, Dennis. Yes, specifically, and I smile because the beauty of that initial men's circle was the individuals, like I mentioned earlier, that had come to the circle and the church for the first time. This was day one of their spiritual journey. And then you had men that had been on a spiritual path their entire life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everywhere in between. Mm-hmm. And to listen to those that are beginning their spiritual path or have been on it for a while, I was pleased, like Clint had affirmed me in the men's group 20 years prior, 30 years prior, actually, that it was nice to know that the energy and the focus and the work that I put in had come to fruition.
Yeah.
When some of the men started speaking about their spiritual journey and what they had gone through and how they've overcome certain things, then you start realizing this is a group of men that care not only about themselves and the others around them, but we've all come to sit in a circle like has been going on for the millennia to protect our own and grow the spiritual nature of who we are. That is the quintessential reason that kept me coming back.
Yes.
To learning, no matter where I was along my path, where they were, where he was, mm-hmm. whatever, that we each were allowed to pass the peace pipe, if you will,
yes.
say our piece and move on and know that we aren't going to be judged.
Yeah.
That's judgment is not a part of this.
That's wow. the richness of it. Is
oh, Clay, that please go on from yeah. there. And also to mm-hmm. talk about your trusting the process.
Yeah. Well, to have such a mix, like Kirby was saying, from all walks of life, all backgrounds, wherever they are in their journey, to have a space for us all to come together and sit in a circle, mm-hmm. really as equals, and learning from one another. One thing that came to mind in the very beginning was, I'm not going to put myself out as a leader of this circle. I can create the safe space. I can facilitate and do some guiding, but I'm not there to teach anything. And that was perhaps one of the, I think, most important decisions, choices that I made was, you know, who am I to come in and try and teach anybody anything? You know, I'm here to show up and put a topic of conversation out and then have a conversation around it and to let that grow and let that conversation evolve from whatever the topic was. We may go off topic. We may stay on topic. It's less about the topic and more about the sharing and the opening up and men coming from their heart with one another, learning how to do that with a safety net of not feeling like somebody's going to sharpshoot him.
Yeah.
So that
and
was
you've had, mm-hmm. you know, the thing is that I have been in the men's circle the least amount of time as any of you. I began in probably the fall, late fall of 2019, and it has transformed. It's absolutely transformed my relationship with men and women, like you were saying, Kirby. There have also been some times when we have had the absolute dark nights of the soul of a number of the people who have gone through this. And Kirby, you are one of those who modeled that and went wow. through that experience and what that meant. Mm-hmm. I know it's, would you please share?
Wow. Yes. It gives me pause.
Yeah.
I lost a son in the midst of just after the first year of the men's group. This was May of 13. So the men's group had been 1 year old. And the men collectively, figuratively, and metaphorically wrap their arms around me in my time of crisis, a crisis greater than anything else that I've ever faced. Standing at the edge of the abyss, where you don't know how you're going to make it for the next day. It's indescribable. I was alone, single man. I had friends. I had relatives and family members. But in its own magnificent and unique way, well, I'll say it in a sense of one of the men said in the group months later after that, something to the effect of, Kirby, you modeled what it is to go through grief. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And once again, I was affirmed that without this men's group, I would not have the privilege of knowing how far I have come, and that all the work, the daily struggle sometimes of reading and journaling and thinking and being up in my head more so than most people that I know, it's not all for naught, that it is exactly the path I need to be on. And that, I think, is one of the most critical gifts that the Circle of Men offer, is a constant and weekly affirmation of, you are on the right path, we're here to support you. That is the power. And I have never found anything as powerful as that consistently, weekly, and continuously in all the searching that I've ever done. Yeah. And I want to say thank you, Clay Boykin, because you stayed on and you held space. And yes, you let it kind of seek out its own natural rhythm. And you literally fought the leadership of the group. We had to corral you and cajole you and say, you are the leader. Yeah. Not by choice, but by osmosis, through an evolution of the group. Hmm. We wanted you to continue, and you graciously have for 8 years. Amazing.
Clay,
thank you.
Would you talk about the experience from the outside, from in the group, but watching and being part of this with Kirby and the rest of the group, and how you saw it during that time?
Boy, I'll never forget that day, because Kirby called me from, I was on the golf course, and he said, oh my God, this has happened. And I dropped everything and rushed and met Kirby at the hospital. And it was just a tragic situation. And my place was there. Without question. And we sat together through a good portion of the night. You know, I ran out
the wee hours of the morning. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And it was an odyssey that began to unfold, as we witnessed Kirby going through this, the various stages of this loss. And it was an educational thing looking back at it. At the time, it was, I don't know why, but I have to be here. I want to be here. And the men gathering said, you know, I think that's where I learned how to hold space or to witness, because I know months later, Kirby would say, Clay, that night, did this really happen this way? And I'd say, I said, yes, it did. And I know that there's been times for me when I have wondered, well, did this, whatever it was, happen to me? And no one's been there to say yes or no, it has. So I don't know whether it was real or not. But to witness and be beside Kirby during that time was sacred. It was tragic. Sometimes bizarre, but there was a bond that event, that happening, that tragedy that bonded us together in ways I never could think of. And so think about that, and think about where I started the first night of the circle. I don't trust men.
Yeah.
What an evolution. And then to see that happen over the course of weeks and months as Kirby, you were going through the stages of grief and going through that, and you came back again and had the space held for you as an equal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. The tragedy of a lifetime turned in to be a gift to others to experience and watch how it unfolded. Wow. We all have these moments when we say, whew, I'm glad it was him and not me. I don't know how I could have survived that. Well, I'm not tooting my horn or anything to that effect, because my God, I know personally men and women that have gone through worse tragedies than that. And I liken it to camaraderie on a battlefield. Mm-hmm. When you're in there and the bullets are flying, or the swords, or the spears, or the lances are coming at you, and you have no one to trust but your comrade behind you, Semper Fi, and you make it out of there alive, you have a bond that you cannot match in real time ever again. That is something that supersedes all experience on earth. And to a degree, that's what I experienced. Mm-hmm. That's what these men experienced. Some of them came up to me and said, oh my God, I can't imagine my son. I can't imagine that happening to me and my son.
Yes. Mm. Well, you know, Clay, when we see this openness, because one of the things that has been so powerful for me in the group is that while we have this sense of battleness and the sense of warriorness, I have seen a vulnerability and a tenderness and a kindness and a compassion that is beyond anything that I have been able to experience with a group of men. Because that was really my place where I had a lot of wariness, and it has so grown me as a human being that we can have, it is not an either or, Clay, it is an and gate. I must have, in order to show up as an entire being, these aspects of myself that are open and tender and kind and vulnerable and can reach out and hold space for the natural healing as has happened, not just with Kirby, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but could you share about that?
Oh, gosh. What comes to mind as you're saying that was that I remember for years this empty burning inside of myself. And it was like whatever it was, I had to clamp down on it and put layers and layers and layers, you know, and I had to show up more powerful and more strong, more vibrato to hide this thing. And what this thing was exactly what you're talking about, is the more tender side. Call it the divine feminine.
Yes.
You know, within every person, there's a divine masculine, a divine feminine.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, our culture, the patriarchal culture, doesn't really approve of men being soft, being tender.
Right.
Only in certain ways. And mm-hmm. and so when as a young boy, I went to my dad with my arms open to hug him, because that's how mama and I connected. He said, no, we shake hands.
Mm-hmm. And so Clay, may I ask you to insert right here one of your favorite Brené Brown quotes about the women saying about the man on the horse.
Yeah. Yeah, Brene had just completed giving a talk, and she about what she'd been studying, and at the time her studies were about women, and this man came up to her afterwards, and he made note of that. He said, "So, Dr. Brian, you're just studying women, is that correct?" And she said, "Well, yes, it is." He said, "Well, now that's convenient. You see, my wife would rather see me die on top of my white horse than to fall off." And so when I heard that, I said, "Well, yeah, that's so true. Where do I go to open this up in a safe place? You know, I need another guy who's been a guy, like I'm a guy, to connect with me. But, you know, we've got that screen up between us."
Yes.
And what Kirby's talking about the special relationships that are formed and how we all grow up to integrate that, the divine masculine and the divine feminine, so we can really, truly be a compassionate male.
So, Clay, how has the circle grown over these past 8 years? You've had hundreds of people who have attended, where it's beginning to expand into other areas. It's having a global initiative, and that we're working. So can you bring us a little up to date on that?
Yeah. So, you know, there were 12 of us that first night. Fast forward, we've got about 150 guys in the Austin area, mm-hmm. that filter in and filter out. And that's another thing about how we come together, is some guys will say, "Well, I need to make a commitment to show up." And I said, no. Don't set yourself up for failure, because we're all busy. Set an intention to be there. And when the time's right, you'll be there. And when you come in, nobody's going to say, "Hey, where you been, Clay?" They're going to say, "Hey, it's great to see you." Mm-hmm. That's how we are. So we've got about 150 guys that are floating in. Some guys come religiously once a year, you know.
Christmas and Easter.
Yeah, there you go. Right. And it's grown. And I've got about 700 now. Now they're all over the world. And we stay connected. You know, I send a weekly email out. But we started circles up in Kansas. We've got one going in Florida. We've got two circles in Austin. And then last year, I had the privilege of working with some men in Kenya and opening a circle there. And as the whole pandemic settles out eventually, my intention is to go work along the Nile River Basin and exactly. do more of this work. So, and I point out one thing. We've got a website. It's called mensfellowship.net. And an interesting point, and I watch this with Google Analytics, right? Invariably, every month, within a couple of percentage points, half of the visitors to that website are women.
Mm-hmm.
And I was given a talk one time and I pointed that out. And I put out there, "Well, they're probably looking for a resource for their man." And the woman sitting next to me, she said, "Well, Clay, let me tell you why I visit your website. I'm a man in a woman's body. Where do I go to figure that out?"
Yeah.
It blew me away. I'd never in my wildest dreams had thought that it would, that was just wasn't in my consciousness, that the ancillary benefit would be a woman of that nature.
Of course.
Yeah.
It has one of the things that I want to both expand upon and to understand, and Kirby, maybe you can help us with this. In the 12-step movement, it's a program of attraction, not promotion. So we're seeing what we have in the world. And the whether masculinity isn't a good or bad thing, or one a femininity better than men. It's whenever we get into the toxic aspects of it. And what has certainly healed for me and been part of heal for me is the toxic aspects of my masculinity. And you've seen that in business, and you see that because we're very male centric. It's still very highly, gender specific for men being in leadership and all. This is an important movement. This is an important aspect for us to heal in how we're going to be able to have the infrastructure to create what we need to have in life in the 21st century.
Well, thank you. Dennis, years ago, I read a book by David White, W-H-Y-T-E. Mm-hmm. He's from the UK. And the title is The Heart Aroused, The Soul of Corporate America. That was the first that I had read, and a harbinger for corporations becoming nowadays more green, more employee-centric, more compassionate. This is after the go-go 1980s when they started laying off everybody and your health benefits went away and you started having to pay for them yourself, and the corporate greed, and I don't care if you've been around for 40 years. I'm not giving you a gold watch. Get out of here because I can hire somebody for half your wages and they're smarter than you because we've trained them in college. Right. This insensitivity of corporate America had a new spin for me. What if? Wow, that's my heart space and always has been. And the concept of where we can go and be examples of that, we can still be business men and women, business leaders, business people, or just cogs in the wheel of the corporate machine, that David White was reaching out and saying, let's be nice. Let's be friends. This insurgence of the Mr. Rogers energy now, with his a couple of movies out by him now that he's passed, and saying, come on, let's all be friends. Let's play fair and have a good life. That's the energies. Those are the energies that I gravitate toward.
I love that, Kirby, because in my work around the world, one thing I have found is the old way of thinking, that 1 + 1 = 2. There's only so much pie, and if I give up any of my pie, to you, there's going to be less pie for me. When in truth, what you're talking about, it's not just a good idea. It's not just because we want to be kind. It's synergy. 1 + 1 is greater than 2. The pie continues to expand for all of us if we use the principles you, Kirby Hiscox, who have been so deeply in business, you, Clay Boykin, who have run multi-million dollar organizations and working through projects, mm-hmm. and the work that you have been doing, that have actually been responsible for these cards. You understand these things, and this is spreading like a virus. You're seeing that, aren't you, Clay?
Yes, and it's interesting that, Kirby, that you bring up David White. I think it was 1998. Motorola brought David White to Austin.
Oh, my.
Wow.
And how fortunate.
And he addressed the senior executives and in a little bit larger group. And we all sat there, high-tech corporation, sat there as David White read poetry to us.
Now, that was about the time of his book, the mid-90s.
Yes, that's right. And it brings to mind one thing that I grew up with in the principles of leadership is the notion of servant leadership. Mm.
Yeah.
And, you know, my experience in the Marine Corps and what I learned from there, what I learned from Peter Drucker, Tom Peters, you know, all the books out there, you know, you put them in a pot and stir them. And the essence of what really comes out is the notion of servant leadership.
How wonderful.
May I jump in right there?
Please, Kirby.
Please. And that is that as I've watched Clay materialize into the servant leader of the circles of men.
Yes.
I've also watched him spin off, and certain men, me included, have sought Clay's counsel and guidance and brainstorm with him because he has a unique ability to take corporate concepts, corporate consciousness, and morph it into what David White was talking about and others. Let's do it with compassion and empathy and concern and care of our fellow mankind, womankind. I'm going to bring a little levity in here for you, Clay, because back in the beginning days, yeah, way back when in the early days of the MFN, yeah, I remember, Clay would, we had whiteboard. And Clay would get up there with this new concept called mind mapping that I was aware of. And he'd start putting circles on the board and doing all this stuff. And the guy's eyelids were just flapping back and forth because he would take one concept and in 5 minutes he'd have 40 different concepts based on that clustered here, 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 and here. And it was mind-blowing.
Stunning.
And he has another one where you take a square box and divide it into four quadrants, windowing or something. And he kind of on the bottom left is less and the upper right is more. And he masterfully puts concepts down so that you can see them linearly.
Yes.
And wake up to new ideas that are your own ideas. That's the key. That is what psychology is all about. You go to a shrink, you sit down, you lay down on the couch, and you just unload. And is the shrink telling you how to fix yourself? Hell no. You're telling yourself how to fix yourself. The shrink is just getting paid $150 or $200 an hour. So, Clay, let me toss it back to you about that magnificent skill you have, both mind mapping and what do you call the box, the window?
Well, yeah, I call that reframing, and it's a process. And it's interesting because I run across people all the time that have used mind mapping. In fact, one fellow in a workshop a week or two ago said to me, he said, Clay, I've been mind mapping for 20 years. It's just my nature. I said, yeah, I get it, yeah. He said, but never have I done what you just did to take that mind map and then reframe all the pieces and to be able to put it into a box with the quadrants and put things into perspective and give texture and dimension to what otherwise was a scattered thoughts around the page.
That is just... That's stunning. And I've seen you do that over and over again. You do that with me every single time we meet. I agree with you, Kirby, that Clay, it's an astounding ability to listen on so many different levels and to give feedback back to us. And which moves me into this last part that I want to go because you're into the next evolution of this initiative, which I see as layers as the circle expands into the search for the new compassionate male.
Yeah.
Could you talk about that?
Yes. You know, thanks. 2019, in the fall of 2018, you know, I'd come to a place where I said, my heart is in this men's work. And so I left the professional world.
and you know, took a big leap of faith, and immediately the world started opening up. Mm-hmm. You know, this whole idea of, you know, once one is committed, then, you know, providence moves too, is not a metaphor. You know, things happened during that year, and I was exposed. I was at the Parliament of the World's Religions. I went and worked with the Gender Equity and Reconciliation Organization people. I was invited to Africa, to Kenya, as I mentioned earlier. You know, I had 35 engagements.
And Clay, you sat with something at the United Nations.
Yes, and we were at, and we did a gender equity and reconciliation workshop for a group at the United Nations.
Thank you.
And the one thing that I brought from last year, if I were just to boil it down, is that there is a sense that I was talking about earlier of this holding this energy down in us. I see men all over the world who, given the opportunity in a safe space, are begging to open that up.
Yes.
Thank you.
And in the heart of that is compassion. And so I really truly believe that at this time, and especially right now, the pandemic, this whole world changed, that what's happening right now is the emergence of the new compassionate male.
Yes.
And the new compassionate male is going to be the new archetype. It's emerging as a new archetype, not to negate the other ones, not, you know, the king, warrior, magician, lovers. Those are there.
No.
But the new compassionate male overarches and gives everyone can point to that and say, yes, that's it. Well, what's the basis of compassion? The golden rule. The golden rule that's found in all the religious traditions of the world. They say it differently, but it's there. So it's kind of a return to what we really knew in the first place, but it's manifesting as the new compassionate male.
And I love how you say that, Clay, because I think I've had the same experience you have. As I talk to clients all around the world or have conversations with people all around the world, and especially with women, when I say, you know, I'm in a group and that Clay Boykin is doing in this, he is leading an initiative called In Search of the New Compassionate Male. And to a person, yes, to especially the women, they go, thank you. Mm-hmm. This is so needed, and it has to come from us. This is not something that can be overcome it. Because we are in this position, we're the ones that are going to have to open up to us. It cannot be brought to us from the outside. We have to be the ones to open up to it from the inside. I remember that metaphor of the prison cell, and for years that you're pushing on that lock, and that prison cell, and it never opens. And all I ever had to do was pull on it. And the instant that I pulled on it, the door opened. It was never locked. Mm-hmm. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for this time, both of you. Kirby Hiscox, I admire you so much for the work that you have done on yourself. And the work that you have done through business, through taking the work throughout, with all the work that you've done. And Clay, how you've changed my life and everything that you have done and everything that you're going to do. Both of you being my friends, both of you being part of this circle that is expanding exponentially in search of the new compassionate male that resides within each of us. Thank you, Kirby.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Clay.
Thanks, Dennis. Thanks,
this
Kirby.
Is Dennis Tardon, and we will see you next time.